genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turning now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
All of this sounds like National Public Radio? Well, you're getting the idea. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is NPR done right. If you want to join the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008, or if you're outside of the county, it's area code 805-639-0008. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is hard to believe. My first guest is going to tell us amazing stories about using social media to achieve hard-to-believe results. My second guest is the dean of Hard to Believe. He works for Ripley's Believe It or Not. He's the leader of their worldwide franchise for amusements and oddities. And my third guest today is going to be talking about the seamy underbelly of the book world and the book world thieves. It's going to be a fascinating discussion. If you want to join in the conversation, you can join us at 639-0008. Andy Smith is a principal at Vinova Ventures, where he advises and bootstraps technical and social ventures. Over the last 20 years, he's served as an executive in the high-tech world. He's a guest lecturer at Stanford University's Graduate School of Business, and he speaks frequently on social technology, engineering virility, and brand building, with a focus on applying technology to address these problems. He's a permanent transplant to the Bay Area from New Jersey. He studied in the Pantheon, and he's lived in a converted South African prison. So welcome to the show, Andy. How are you today?
I'm wonderful, Billy. It's great to be here.
Great. Glad to have you on. First of all, the book that you wrote is titled The Dragonfly Effect: Quick, Effective, and Powerful Ways to Use Social Media to Drive Social Change. So my first question is, why a dragonfly? I mean, we've had elephants, we've had sharks, butterflies, hedgehogs, all kinds of other animals. What made you choose the dragonfly as an appropriate metaphor for your book?
Well, the dragonfly is, in many cultures, a symbol of rebirth and transformation, and it was very appropriate for the subject matter that we go after, which is about creating entirely new experiences and results from seemingly little resources. Also, the dragonfly is unique among insects in that it can fly really in any direction, even hover, when all four wings are beating together. And we combine this with a methodology that we define in the book that relies on four separate aspects that map to each of these four wings. So the dragonfly was a good fit in many, many ways.
All right. Well, good. Let's talk about that, because your book, really, when I was reading it, it combines a couple of things. It combines good marketing techniques with, obviously, an understanding of social media, an understanding of how to tell a story to really get an emotional appeal, and, of course, a good mission. So let's talk about the four wings of the dragonfly effect. What are the four wings, the four principles that you teach?
Sure. The first one is we call focus, and the idea is developing a single, clear, consistent goal that you know whether you're making progress to along the way. Without this, most efforts are probably doomed to fail, or if they succeed, it's really just because of luck. The second stage, once you've got basically a roadmap or a plan lined out, is about grabbing attention, because before you start doing anything, everyone you want to talk to is probably paying attention to something else, whether it's their Blackberries or a newspaper or a TV. You've got to find a way to grab attention. So we go into the different ways that you can secure that away from something else, whether it is something irritating like a loud sound, or whether it's something that's much more impactful, like an image that evokes an emotion that really reaches people.
Okay, so you got to get them off the snide.
Exactly, and we think of this, the shorthand for grab attention is made you look. But in general, you have to make people look in a way that's consistent with what you want them to do and what you believe in. And that's where the next stage comes in, and we call that engage. And it really boils down to, it's about storytelling. The purpose of engage is to make people care. So once you've gotten their attention and you've told them a story, you need to make them care and basically sort of cross the finish line and either click or convert or purchase or get involved in some particular way for themselves. And you know, that's the main goal there. And again, it relies mainly on the idea of storytelling, because as people, we're actually wired not really to understand logic. Our brains are much more wired to understand stories, and we're going to remember characters and over, you know, difficulties overcome much more than a fact or a figure that we're told.
Go ahead. Very true. I agree.
And then from there are going to be some percentage of the people that go all the way through the engage process that still want to do more. You know, it wasn't enough for them to click or to purchase or to do something themselves. They want to take on the action as if it was their own. And that's where this next and the last wing comes in. We call that take action. And that's where whoever is running the campaign basically redeploys the tools developed for the first three stages and puts them in the hands of these newly converted people and allows them to go off and take the campaign on as if it was their own. And that's where, you know, social media really gets involved, and that's where the amplification of your effort really gets involved, because at that point it goes beyond what you or your team is doing and goes into anyone that you can motivate to get involved.
All right. We're talking to Andy Smith, everybody. He's the co-author of the book, The Dragonfly Effect. Great book. And in your book, Andy, you highlight some nonprofits who are doing a good job of harnessing social media. Just to name a couple, you've got Kiva, Embrace, and Hope Lab. Now, I like Hope Lab the best. So tell us the story behind Hope Lab and what they've accomplished using social media.
So Hope Lab is an incredible story, because what they did was really dive down deeply into understanding the way people work, and their effort was to work with young cancer patients and basically try to figure out how to make them live longer, because there's a statistic that basically said that too many kids with cancer are dying because they're not taking their chemo, or they develop this negative spiral. And so what Hope Lab did was they with a deep understanding of the way, you know, people and their minds work, and you know, the fact that we all know that kids like to spend time playing games, but what they hadn't figured out until this work with Hope Lab was that you can actually increase people's, you know, ability and willingness and energy to take medicine and to benefit from it if you put it in the right context. So Hope Lab itself created this game called Remission, in which you play a character named Roxy, and you fly through the body with a weapon, and your targets are these ugly cancer cells, and your ammunition is your chemotherapy. Because what they found was that people, the kids in particular, would look at both cancer and chemotherapy as their enemy. And when they were able to look at chemotherapy as something that was dangerous, but dangerous to the cancer, and part of them and something that they wanted, it changed their whole perception, their whole attitude towards treatment. And they used this game framework to demonstrate that, and they had dramatic results, even when compared to a similar game, like an Indiana Jones game, where they were going and doing these things. They just found that like 30 minutes of play a day dramatically increased both the way that these kids took their medicine and their ability to recover.
Now, remarkable story, remarkable insight, and that is the power of using social media. One of the other very moving stories in The Dragonfly Effect shows how social media really can save lives. It's the story of Robert Tatwani and Simi Bhatia, a 32-year-old leukemia patient. I butchered his name. I'm sorry. He's from Southeast Asia. I have a hard time pronouncing it. However, it's really kind of parallels something we've got going on, Andy, here in Ventura County. We've got a young lady. She's 16 years old. Her name is Mia Stottenborough. She's got bone marrow cancer. They're looking for a donor. So tell us the story about Robert Tatwani and how that really embraces the butterfly effect, the dragonfly effect.
No problem. In fact, his story and the story of Samir and Vinay are the stories that are at the core of our inspiration to write the book in the first place. And it was simply the story was that Samir was a young entrepreneur in Silicon Valley, newly married, you know, pretty much his whole life ahead of him, you know, very much an energetic, a guy with a lot of friends. And he just came back from a trip and found he was a little bit weaker than he thought he should be. And he's a very fit guy, so that didn't make any sense. So we went and found out, much to everyone's dismay, that he had AML, a form of leukemia, just like your friend Mia. And he had the additional problem of that, since he was Southeast Asian, and since he, even within the South Asian community, he had a relatively narrow blood group, the only thing that was going to save him was a bone marrow transplant. And because of that rarity of his blood, he had a 1 in 20,000 chance of finding a match.
Wow.
And in fact, when they went to the bone marrow registry, they didn't find a match at all. But his friends were all sort of young entrepreneurs, you know, very, very technical, very motivated people just like him. And they looked at that and they thought, well, what can we do about this? You know, we're not doctors. How can we do something? Because we refuse to let this guy just pass out of our lives. You know, we're not at the stage where we're baking cakes and just trying to do things to help the family. They said, okay, 1 in 20,000, that's a number we can deal with. So all we've got to do is get 20,000 people into the bone marrow registry of the right ethnic background in the right period of time and save his life. And that's exactly what they set about to do. They got the parameters, and this goes back to the methodology we talked about before. They focused. They said they could raise money, they could do all these things, they could bake cakes, but instead what they said was the only thing that we're going to do that matters is get people into the bone marrow registry that are of the right ethnic background to be a likely fit. And we need to get 20,000 of them in to raise the odds, and we need to do it within, you know, a matter of just a few weeks in order to have it, you know, in order to have it matter, in order to save, you know, have a chance at saving him. And so that's exactly what they did. They built a campaign that basically was the core of this methodology we talked about, with a clear focus goal, a great way to grab attention, a great way to make people care, and then a way to redeploy these things so they could get beyond themselves. And the method by which they did that was they created what they call sort of social change in a box. You know, they templated all of the things that you needed to do to run a bone marrow drive and redeployed that to anyone. So anywhere in the world who wanted to do this could basically, without having to ask permission from anyone, without having to communicate with everyone, could just pull it off the website and go and send the email that they needed that was templated to their CEO, send the other one to HR, contact the bone marrow collection agency, and do these things. And it would, and in the process of doing this, they ran hundreds and hundreds of bone marrow registries and got 24,000 people into the registry in just a matter of a few weeks.
And that's remarkable yeah. results, Andy. I mean, and it just goes to show you the power of escalating and using the social media to reach the world in such a quick and efficient way. I like that story. I think that it's great and very parallel to what we got going on here in Ventura County. Now, the other thing on a larger company scale that impressed me was Nike's We Portal. And they kind of identified a couple of things that I found interesting. First of all, here in America, most of us want to donate money or time when it comes to a charitable cause. But they've actually identified and extended a couple of other things that make people's giving meaningful to them. And so tell us about the We Portal, and also tell us about the differences in the findings between American Nike employees and their European counterparts.
Sure. I mean, it's great. I mean, Nike is a very inspirational story, too, because, you know, it's actually a company that says that we have a strong sense of values, and we want to bring it out. Nike employees had already developed ways to give back in basically four separate ways of matching employees with opportunities. But the corporate level said, you know, we think we can do this better at the same time without getting in the way, because all these individual portals or these individual sites worked reasonably well. They didn't benefit from any sort of cross-fertilization or any sort of unifying idea among them. They were all sort of separate, and Nike's a very integrated company. And so they studied this long and hard, because the worst thing they could do, as far as they were concerned, was somehow dampen the spirit. And one of the things they found along the way, as you sort of were alluding to, that people in different parts of the world that worked for Nike had different ideas of what giving back was. You know, in America, we tend to think of giving back as doing something for people who are less fortunate than us, particularly financially. But in Europe, near their European operation, that was not the sole focus of giving back. There's a substantial portion of it that's really about helping your neighbor. So you imagine that people would get time off to, you know, help their neighbor, literally like build a barn or build a fence or do something. And that when they looked at it at a global level, it was really important they embraced that idea, because that was community involvement. It was just a matter of community involvement in different culture. The next thing you mentioned was that they were more sophisticated in how they looked at what giving back is. You know, where you or I work, we may have dealt with somewhat limited volunteer opportunities, but most of the corporate giving was focused on collecting money from employees, and those are both very good ways to do it. But they also, Nike in their process, found that they had a lot of people who had special skills, including things like they had people with design skills. And so when they matched those people up with nonprofits or organizations that needed design work, they got the added benefit of these people could contribute from their strength into something that really needed their skill that was disproportionate to the investment of time that they would otherwise get. We refer to this as an idiosyncratic fit, you know, a specialized fit that's relatively unique. And the portal, because it was big and, you know, it has the ability to address 30,000 Nike employees, it can find these matches much more quickly. And the last thing they did was also unique and really is where social media comes in. They allowed people to give from their voice. They have voice, talent, money, and time. And voice is the idea that if you have a big Twitter following, you have influence. And you can build awareness. You can build advocacy for something. And that is just as valuable in many instances as going in and actually, you know, pounding nails or ladling soup or doing the things that normal volunteering opportunities do. And so when they put all four of these together, it made for an incredibly motivating, powerful platform for a company to give back and be responsible in a community while completely matching up with what employees wanted to do.
I think it's a fascinating story. We're talking to Andy Smith, everybody, the author of the book, The Dragonfly Effect, Quick, Effective, and Powerful Ways to Use Social Media to Drive Social Change. Andy, in the 30 seconds or so that we've got left, I wanted to know, what did you get out of writing this book?
Well, it'd be a long list, but I mean, I really, as a career marketer, I think there's an opportunity, and maybe other folks in the field will see this, is that sometimes marketing doesn't always feel like it's doing the best thing or the most valuable thing. But writing this book helped me realize that marketing has a lot to give back to the world in terms of making connections and motivating people to do the things that really satisfy them.
Ah, that's great. Andy, it's been a pleasure talking to you. We're talking to Andy Smith, the co-author of the book, The Dragonfly Effect. We'll talk to you down the road, Andy. Thanks so much for being our guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain.
Fantastic, Billy. Thank you very much.
Talk to you soon.